Accession number 26527, Reel 5.
Mr. Holness, Reel 5. We were talking about the Mediterranean trips, the millionaire's run. Anything else you remember from those trips?
Well, mainly, as I say, they were routine. But I do remember that we went on our last trip back. We was approaching the Straits of Gibraltar, and even in wartime, we used riding lights, and there was no dark ship or anything like that for going through the Straits. But not far from us, there was an American hospital ship, the Wisteria. We, on the same course as us, but we didn't know where it was going to, of course. Anyway, taking a run through the Straits, we seemed to be getting nearer to this Wisteria for some reason, and we hadn't been in touch with it. I myself was off duty at the time, and I was in my bunk, because it happened somewhere about midnight. And the first thing I knew about it was when there was a big thump, and the ship rolled, threw me off my bunk across the metal deck table, and we all searched for our life jackets, which we were supposed to be wearing, life belts they were, which we were supposed to be wearing at all times. We had to find those. And those abandoned ship stations had piped. So we went up on deck, and there was a hospital ship alongside us. It rammed us amidships. We never had an answer as to how it happened. There was an inquiry at Gibraltar, because we had to put it in there. It hit us right in the sick bay in midships.
Had it done much damage?
Stove the side in, but fortunately didn't make water. But we had to leave the rest of the convoy and the group and go into Gibraltar for a few days to get some repairs done. So that gave us a chance to have a look around Gibraltar, which we hadn't had a chance to do for some time. While we was there, the Formidable was there, the aircraft carrier, and tied up along one of the other wharves, and we were challenged to a game of football. And I'm very pleased to say we won. We beat the Formidable, which was a crew of about 1,000 probably. So that was a feather in our caps. But one other thing had happened while we was there. There's a seaman, a three-badge able seaman, and who acted as quartermaster. He had a brother in Gibraltar in the army. And while he was there, he went and looked him up, because he hadn't seen him for some years. And he came aboard during the evening and said, saw the officer of the day and asked permission to bring his brother aboard. So permission was granted, and he came on with him. And he came down the mess deck, and he said, well, time's up now, I suppose I better be getting back. And they proceeded to change uniform. They were identical twins. And the one in the army had changed uniform before they came aboard and came and asked the officer of the watch for permission to bring his brother aboard, who was a sailor. And they got away with it because nobody knew. Until I told our first attendant since the war about this, they never knew this story. They had the wrong person aboard. But he actually got away with that. And he only lived at Canterbury, not far from me, and I've been in touch with him ever since then. He died a year ago, actually, 86. But they were identical twins, because on occasions I've seen his brother in Herne Bay and spoken to him, say, hello, Frank. He said, I'm not Frank, I'm his brother. So alike, absolutely perfect. Yeah.
Did you have many firms on board ships? You know what I mean by firms, like a photography, a chap who did photography and sold the pictures, a chap who did the adobe and the washing.
Well, no doubt, no, adobe you did yourself, but we had one chap who did, we weren't allowed to take photos, we weren't allowed to carry cameras, actually. But we had this one chap that had was keen for amateur photographer, and he took one or two little photos on the side, and he gave us one or two mementos of photo of the ship's life belt or something like that.
Did he give you them, or did he sell you them?
Well, I can't recall that, honestly, but it wouldn't have been Danny Coppers anyway. He was very good, and he turned out a bit. He went professional after the war, and he opened his own business in Romford. Yeah. And there was one other occasion when we was down in Algiers. When we were leaving harbour, we'd had a Christmas Day, or Boxing Day we left, and everybody had had celebration. The captain laid on a Christmas meal, full meal, that was Christmas fair, and party, of course, and then we had to sail the next early morning, still dark. And 40, I was still under the weather. Most of the officers, only a couple of officers suitable to take us out. And I'm afraid to say my yeoman was under the weather as well. He liked his drink, he couldn't get out, make it. So that's one of the few occasions when I took over the ship, to go out of harbour. And on the way out, somebody had thrown something over the side, which you're not supposed to do anyway. And one of the officers said, "Is that something went over the side?" Or, "No, somebody threw something overboard." And the other one thought he said, "A man overboard." So we had to go to, everybody was available, we had to go and look for this man overboard, which turned out to be a box. But also, we continued out, and the skipper, he's called out, followed that red light, which was supposed to be the Dallas stern light, the cruiser was just leaving harbour. But the red light turned out to be the light on the end of the boom, and we hit it. But no damage, fortunately, and everybody carried on their own sweet way. And it was after the Gatta, by the way. When I was thinking of it, talking about call signs just now. Our call sign was Particle. And I remember them putting it over the loudspeakers to all the other ships that was around, from all the articles in Particle, "We wish you Merry Christmas." Just a little something I remember there. From then on, we had quite a safe journey back.
What about the routine work? Had it changed at all? Was it changing, or did you get, you know, the sort of thing you were doing day by day as a signaller?
I went up a bit in the ranks from originally, because when we started out, as I said previously, we were three ordinary signalmen, really. And when we were rated up after passing out in Bermuda, which we delayed for some time, we had three qualified signalmen on board. So we were told that two of them had to go. Well, we had a chat between ourselves, and at that time I'd been caught in for a year or more. And I said, "Well, I would like to stay in Belfast if I could." And so that was agreed. The other two went and I stayed behind. And the signalmen who came in after me were all new ones. So really I was sort of second in command, signal section. And if it wasn't for that, I would have advanced further, but I just took the next TO, which trained operators, which next to the leading hand. Otherwise, it meant me leaving the ship completely, and I didn't want to do that.
What about, did things change, or was there any change in the routine or the nature of the work you were doing, the signal?
No. Throughout the war, it was basically the same routine right through. There was nothing sort of new came in at those stages, not scout signals. Except my signalling improved tremendously.
In what way? How much?
Well, it didn't matter how fast you sent more, so I could read it, which was a great asset, because there was one occasion when one of our junior signalmen couldn't read the signal station in Algiers, and they told him to get somebody who could. Things like that. In fact, I could do it. Don't matter how fast I made it, except that there's a limit on more signals, so it's flashing, but once you get over about 10, 11 words a minute, the light goes into one. So you've got to know just where to stop, speed. But 10 words a minute is comfortable anyway.
Now, unless there's anything else about those Mediterranean convoys, the next thing would be when you were put onto a sort of hunter submarine escort.
Yes, support groups, yeah. Supporting convoys through different areas, but mainly the Bay of Biscay, though we did do one trip up north, and We did sink one.
I thought it was in the Western Approaches.
No, that was later. We did do one patrol up north somewhere. I can't give you the full details there, because I don't recall it all. But there was a submarine involved, and there was occasion when we sunk a sub too. Bay of Biscay, we was involved. I think we've all done the glider bomb, but we did patrols there. The other one you were thinking of was the end, towards the end of the war in January, the end of the war, we'd gone patrol in Western Approaches and sailed down through the Irish Sea and that way.
Yeah.
And this was the occasion when the Manners, another Captain Class frigate, was torpedoed.
Well, tell us that story. What exactly happened?
Well, we was only sort of in the vicinity when it happened, but we was one of the ships detailed to go and try and trace the submarine that did it. And I believe it's a black one. It was two of our group. They actually sank the submarine that sank the Manus. I'm not sure which two it was now. So that was quite a good occasion for us. And
what do you remember of it? Did you see anything?
I mean, no, we didn't actually see it, but we were all in the vicinity all the time because, I mean, it happens and you're not there, so you don't see anything. But we were supporting everything else that was going on. But this other one I got to think of was the occasion when we were in a support group, again in Western Approaches, but in the northern area, and we made this contact, and we, along with Drury, or Pasley, one of those, we attacked the submarine, and it brought up various stuff from the bottom, from the ship, oil and various bits and pieces, and the order was given to away boat's crew and one signalman to go with the boat to see what they could pick up. And my mate, I still keep in touch with, he's the one detailed to go on the whaler to see what they could find. And going round, they picked up quite a lot of debris, which included paperwork and commenting on trips to Trondheim and Norway and places like that, and also human parts. And the doctor, who also went out with them, told him to pick up something from the water as he wanted to take it back. And this turned out to be some lungs of one of the seamen, obviously. And this was taken back to the base towards the proof of sinking.
Yeah. Did you actually see this on plane?
I didn't see it, but it was put in a jar, I know, and kept on board. But there's quite a lot of debris picked up, and it was proved that it was sunk at that time. I think it was a 600, U-boat 600, I think. Yeah.
And what was it like on these U-boat patrols? I mean, you know, anti-submarine patrols, is it?
Well, it was just routine. We just accepted it was just another trip, and until you got a contact, you didn't do anything. Just lookouts and kept the ship clean.
Was it more exciting than say the Mediterranean patrols, convoys?
No, every trip was a trip. There was no variation in excitement or anything like that. You just accepted that was your job, and the routine was basically the same for everything. There was no worries about being going into action, or if anything happened, it never entered your mind.
So what's the next thing that you remember happening?
From there? Well, of course, obviously, we're getting near the end of the war there, and we're back into Belfast. I just want to mention, while I think about it, that at this time, we reached our first 100,000 miles of sea time on the Baisley, which was a lot of miles. The 21st of April was the date we sunk this sub, where the debris was picked up. And now it's approaching VE Day.
Did you realise it was coming up?
We didn't know. We knew the war was going well, but we've still detailed for another convoy. And this turned out to be a Russian convoy, which one trip we hadn't undertaken in our group, so many of the captain cars had. And we were due to sail just before VE Day, which we didn't know was going to be VE Day at that time. And we just started off, and from out of the blue, the war stopped. And we went back into Belfast again, which...
So you hadn't got far?
No, we hadn't gone up to the Clyde and went back from there.
And what sort of celebrations? What do you remember?
We were taken in to join the celebrations, and it was just wild in Belfast, I might say.
In what way? Tell us about it.
Wild parties in the street and swimming in the pool, or the fireman's pool outside the city hall. I didn't jump in, I might say. But
what were you doing?
I was with my girlfriend. We were just enjoying everything generally, as you do with these dudes. And jumping around doing something in the street, I suppose, with the party. But we had to go back, come to a halt with that at midnight, I suppose, go back aboard. And the next day or two, we sailed for Russia. And they didn't stop us doing that. We still went on the convoy.
Now, what was that convoy like? The war was over, but it was still a tough old convoy.
Well, nobody still knew what to expect, because though the submarine, German submarines had been ordered to surrender, some of them were still sort of holding on. But when we did set off, which finally, after rounding up the ships we were going to take with us and other delays, I think we set off about the 15th of a week later, about the 15th from the Clyde. And on the way up, we met no end of German submarines, which had surrendered, coming down past us and going on reporting to Scotland. But we went on up to Pogliano, full daylight, of course, middle of the summer. No instances to worry about, though we still carried out the full routine in case of any rogue submarines. And we went into Pogliano, which is the entrance to Murmansk. While there, the Russians were very good. They put on a show of Russian dancing and general Russian show about the sort of thing they do, the Russians. There's entertainment for us. And after two or three days, we left there and wound our way back. But it's very interesting to be able to go to Russia in the last moments. And but I do believe we were the last Russian, well, we must have been the very last Russian convoy ever to go anywhere, ever to go up there.
So what happened next then? The war was over, but the Japanese war was still on.
The Japanese war was still on, though we weren't detailed to go out there.
So what were you doing?
The dates coming into August, we were detailed to leave Belfast.
So up to Lenin, you just stayed in Belfast?
We stayed in Belfast till further notice, but which wasn't long afterwards. We had to go to Chatham, take the ship to Chatham. So the very last trip on the Baisley was to Chatham, arriving there sometime in the end of August. And we paid off there.
How did you feel about leaving the old ship?
It was very sad after all that time. I remember when we brought it back, we came around the south coast, coming back, coming up into the Thames, and of course I could look out and see Herne Bay, where I live, or see the area, basically where I live. But we went on into Chatham, and within a day or two we'd paid off completely. The American crew took over to take the ship back, which I would love to have done myself. And at the end of that, there was only, I believe it was only six of us left of the original crew that commissioned it, including Lieutenant Jefferson. Yeah.
So what happened then? I mean, you
from there we went back to the base in Chatham, which was a Cookham Camp signal school. Nobody knew what to do with us. Not at that time. We was hung about there. We still carried on instructions as if nothing had happened. I've got some hockey in, played quite a lot of sport, which got me out of doing anything else, because they were full of that. If you had a match on, you didn't do anything else, and that was it. But from there, after about a month, I was sent to Corsham.
Corsham?
Corsham in Wiltshire. And that was another signal school there. And I spent another month in there doing nothing, similar to what I've been doing in Chatham. And the draft came through for me to join HMS Jessur, J-A-S-E-U-R, Jessur, which was a fleet sweeper in Liverpool.
And
so off I went to Liverpool.
And that would be what, October? 2 months? Roughly.
At a guess, yes. At a guess, about October time. I suppose I spent month or two on there.
Now, what was the Jessur like? What did you think of her?
Well, it's a British-built ship, which was entirely new to me, because I'd been brought up with an American-built ship.
And how did it compare and contrast?
Hammocks. We had to use a hammock there.
And what do you think of the hammocks?
Well, it was all right. I didn't mind that. first time I actually brought it into use, but I could still use it, all right. Canteen mess we went on to, which you paid so much in a... or they allowed you so much, and you used that. And if you didn't spend it all on your victualling, you got a refund at the end of it. So somehow or other, it always seems to get a refund back. I forget how much it was, but you just get some. But I was only on... I was in in the harbour Liverpool for about a month, I suppose, while they was getting the ship ready for sea. And there was detail to go to the Far East. So, but we did go out and do one or two trips, trials, and while I was there and other things with it.
What was she like at sea?
Oh, it was quite good. In fact, I think it was more stable than the Baisley, but it was about 1,000 tons lighter. Well, 100 tons lighter.
I mean, did you prefer it as a ship? I mean,
I didn't mind. I just accepted it, funny enough. It's different people, of course, different crew.
How did you get on? Was it a happy ship, like you'd had at the Baisley? Or
yes. We had something on there which we never had on the Baisley. We had a dartboard on the mess deck. We created quite a dart team on there. But we had to wait for the ship to stop rolling sometimes if it was at sea. It was a good ship. It was quite a good experience to go to Liverpool. But I was only on there until we were due to sail in December. And orders came through for my release under Class B. There was two releases those days. Class B, where the firm you worked for applied for you to early release, so they get you back to work. Didn't get so much leave either, only 3 weeks leave. But I came through, and at that time, I had been advised by the writer on there that there was an award of some sort coming through for me, and that's as much as he knew. They must have been confirming that I was there and available, I think. But I had actually got taken off before they arrived, and then the signalman that relieved me, actually came from Dover signal station, where my brother was based until he was finished. And he just left him, and he couldn't make out why he came to another wholeness. So that was quite a coincidence. But I was taken off there, sent back to Chatham once again, and just waiting for a demob from there.
And when were you demobbed?
January the demob came through. And
what happened when you were demobbed? I mean, what was the procedure?
I was in Cookham Camp when I was sent back, of course, that was a signal place. So I had to go back down to the naval barracks, and we had the usual medical inspections and kitting out with the demob suit and all the little things they do with occasions. But that was the end of my career in the Navy.
And what was the award when it arrived? Just tell us about
that. Well, I've noted it was sometime afterwards, about February, I should think. I can't remember the timing, but I was advised I'd been awarded the British Empire Medal for distinguished service. And I can only put that down to my work. I was always called on to do ships things on the Baisley that probably above my rank. But
what kind of thing?
Well, when the yeoman wasn't available, you took over the duties, basically. And very often he wasn't available because I'm going back to the original yeoman we had, and the service on the ship itself. I was always there. And
was it a proud moment? I mean, did it mean much to you?
Well, I suppose I can't recall, really. I just remember opening this letter to say that I'd received it, and that unfortunately they weren't in a position to have it presented to me, not at the palace. But it is framed and on the wall.
Now, what did you do when you came out? I mean,
went back to my old job on the electricity supply company.
How was that after all this time away? You'd been away for, 4 years?
Yeah, the pay was better, I must say. When I started there at £0.50 a week, which went up to 7.6, I think, if I remember rightly, before I left, went into, adult money when I came out, which was quite a lot, especially after Navy pay. I think it was about £2 a week. It was a lot of money in those days. But I stayed there another 18 months, and then I went back onto the job I like doing, onto the pleasure boats and fishing.
Now, why did you leave the electricity company? I mean, good money?
I got a bit bored with that. It's there was a lot of indoor work for me there, and I didn't like being indoors all the time. Not at that stage, anyway. I had to be out in the open. And I think it was time for change. Also, it was all talk about nationalisation and things like that, which would have meant it moving to another area from Herne Bay, and I didn't want to leave Herne Bay either.
So what did you do for the family, Furman? What was
I was boating, pleasure trips, and
what was that work
fishing,
like?
Lobstering. Well, that was good, because I mean, it's the height of the seasons after the war when everybody was coming on holiday, especially to Herne Bay. And It was quite a good business to be in. Running all day long, 7 days a week through the summer. And winter we probably turned to shrimping and things like that, just to tide it over. And it was quite good. But long hours, because I say 7 days a week, all the hours of daylight. Early mornings fishing, lobster pots and things like that. Well, I enjoyed that. That was my life.
Did you keep that up?
Well, it was only about 3 years after the war when the business started dropping away. Because people were beginning to move more and go to different places. And it surprised me how quickly it did drop after the war in the way you could live in that sort of life. And I was married as well, which...
You got married in...
I got married in 1946.
That's the girl from Belfast.
The girl from Belfast, I brought her over. And I was spending rather a lot of time out on my work, and so I had to do something at that time. And so I went on to... Actually, I went back to electricity for a little while. They took me back for 2 or 3 years. I must have been a good worker to take me back, I think. Anyway, from there I went on to the post office on telephone work. And
that was your career with the post office,
yeah,
wasn't it? I've seen the long service.
Then on I did 33 years with the post office on telephones and transferring to the, what they called the writing side, which was the office work with counters and that sort of thing. And I've worked on the counters for a long time, counter work.
Now, how did your war experiences, your service in the Navy, how do you think it had affected you, good or bad, physically and mentally? Do you see what I mean?
Good, because I met my wife. We had a long and happy marriage. Mentally, no problems.
Didn't give you nightmares or any troubles?
No, nothing. Never. It was just a job.
Any physical problems that developed? You know,
not from the Navy, no. No problems from the Navy at all. And... I've had a very good life.